exclusive debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, particularly for Republicans. There used to be, I mean, when I say in the deep, dark, dim recesses of history, like last week, a great feeling that, oh my gosh, the Republican Party is in trouble. What are they going to do? Biden is riding high. The Democrats are using their very, very narrow congressional majorities to good effect. Well, today there is a bundle of good news for the GOP. Some of it having to do with the state of California, not only losing a seat in Congress. Yes, really, for the first time in the entire history of California since it was admitted to the Union in 1850. It's an amazing thing. And there's also today, it is official, the governor of California is going to face recall. The voters are going to have a chance probably in November of this year to vote him out of office. And to vote into office a former Glamour magazine Woman of the Year, that would be Caitlyn Jenner. I think probably not, but there will be other choices, including other Republicans in a state that had been all Democratic. This is incredibly good news. Also good news is the fact that there are so many people who in the name of political correctness, goes so far over the top. And I do believe that America is sick of it. So does a thoughtful, moderate conservative, Bret Stephens, not a big fan of President Trump, but he is saying that right now, the Democratic extreme left, the party of wokeness, the party of political correctness, could be pushing people over from the center to the right and pushing far more people away from Democratic orthodoxy. We will get to that as well on a busy day on the Michael Medved Show. But first, I actually don't believe this is a problem for Republicans. I think it's an opportunity. But there's an attack on Rick Santorum. And let me tell you, Rick Santorum, former senator from Pennsylvania, I didn't support him in his presidential campaign, but he's been a friend of mine for years. He was kind enough to mention me in his autobiography and to mention our friendship. And Rick Santorum, I think, is an exemplary public servant. And he is not a racist or a hater of any kind. He's someone who, as a father of seven children, I think has been an exemplary guy in so many ways in American politics in terms of maintaining some integrity, some sensitivity, and some persuasiveness for the conservative cause. He is now in a world of controversy because of alleged hate speech that he introduced when he was speaking to a group from Young America's Foundation. I've spoken for Young America's Foundation, two dozen times all over the country. It's a great, great organization that tries to provide on college campuses mostly some kind of counterweight to all of the liberal propaganda that most people in college campuses get plenty of through their professors, through other student organizations, etc. So he is speaking for Young America's Foundation. They are putting together a faith and freedom meeting. And I think it was supposed to include people from various colleges. And he talks about the origins of our country and why our country's origins are very different from those of other nations. Listen to what Senator Santorum, who is now a commentator for CNN, there have been demands for his resignation. This is what he actually had to say. Listen.
I don't know of any other country in the world that was settled predominantly by people who were coming to practice their faith. They came here because they were not allowed to practice their particular faith in their own country. And so they came here mostly from Europe, and they set up a country that was based on Judeo-Christian principles. When I say Judeo-Christian, the Mosaic laws, Ten Commandments, and the teachings of Jesus Christ, the morals and teachings of Jesus Christ. That's what our founding documents are based upon. It's in our DNA. You know, if you think of other countries like Italy and Greece and China and Turkey and places like that, they've all sort of changed over time. I mean, they've been there for millennia in many cases. And their culture has sort of evolved over time. But not us. We came here and created a blank slate. We birthed a nation from nothing. I mean, there's nothing here. I mean, yes, we have Native Americans, but candidly, that there isn't much Native American culture in American culture. It was born of the people who came here pursuing religious liberty to practice their faith, to live as they ought to live, and have the freedom to do so. Religious liberty.
Okay. This is obviously, you know what got him into trouble. It was not saying that America was founded by people who sought to practice their faith in their own way, and actually in the case of the New England colonies, to build ideal societies that they weren't allowed at that time to build back home in England or even in Netherlands, where the pilgrims had gone for more religious liberty. So this isn't the problem. The problem is, he said, they came here, there was nothing. And this has produced all kinds of outrage, demanding a firing of Rick Santorum. For instance, Mark Lamont Hill, who has a show called Black News Tonight, he says this in ripping Senator Santorum. Listen.
Oh, my God. Rick, any measure of social prosperity, we at the bottom. Any measure of social misery, we at the top. So, Senator Graham, you are sorely mistaken. And, oh my God, Rick Santorum, you trying to tell me that there's no Native American culture? Well, first of all, there's tremendous Native American culture and tremendous Native American influence in the United States. You wrong about that. But to the extent that you don't see it, it's because y'all killed them. You colonized, you used genocide, you erased people. Settler colonialism is the reason why you don't see more Native Americans and more Native American culture. So please don't act like y'all just came over here with a religious mission. Y'all came over here to pillage, to destroy, to erase, and that's what you're saying. Don't think you slick when you said we birthed a nation. We know D.W. Griffith, Birth of a Nation. We know the KKK propaganda film. We know what you're trying to do. And it's interesting that you are a CNN contributor, because sometimes when people work for CNN and say stuff off line, they get, you know what, we ain't gonna do that.
Okay, and what he was meant to say is they get fired. And no, it is totally inappropriate to fire him, because basically what he was saying is that Native American culture was not erased by, I mean, for one thing, the whole charge of genocide, there are more Native Americans identifying as Native Americans than were here at the time the Europeans arrived. And the whole idea of genocide is nonsense. We were talking about this yesterday in regards to that Wounded Knee controversy. And yes, you can bury my heart at Wounded Knee, but we shouldn't bury the truth at Wounded Knee. There are over 5 million Native Americans in the United States, 78% of whom live outside reservations. California, Arizona, and Oklahoma have the largest populations of Native Americans in the United States. But what Rick Santorum was saying was, when it comes to our system of government, which has remained amazingly stable for over 200 years, and when it comes to our culture, our society, our values, okay, what aspects of Native American civilization have we incorporated into the United States of 2021? If you want to make a contribution on that, tell me where I'm missing the story of profound Native American influence. Give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. We'll be right back with more Backlash on Santorum. And on the Michael Medved show, we're talking about the gigantic controversy that has emerged surrounding Rick Santorum and his position as a contributor to CNN. He's not part of their normal a news staff, but when they want a conservative voice, they turn to Senator Santorum, who was an outstanding U.S. senator, by the way, and you may remember ran a very surprisingly strong presidential campaign, showed that you don't have to be a rich person and you don't have to be prolific fundraiser either to be a competitive candidate for president. He ran against Mitt Romney in 2012, tied in the Iowa caucus, and actually, I think he won 11 primaries in course to finishing as runner-up to now Senator Romney. Anyway, as far as Senator Santorum is concerned, there's all this fulminating about, well, people didn't come here to practice their religion. They came here to rape and pillage. You cannot read the very well-documented histories of the pilgrims and think that is true. You can't read the history of Massachusetts Bay Colony. You can't hear the history of Jamestown. I mean, what people neglect about Jamestown is that the Jamestown settlers in 1607 in Virginia were also deeply Christian. The very, very first structure that they put up was right after they had arrived near today's Virginia Beach. They put up a giant cross that they built because that was their vision, was to build a better Christian commonwealth than they had left behind in Britain. And yes, the people in Virginia in particular also wanted to get rich. Never really did. They struggled and struggled. They thought they'd find gold somewhere in Virginia, and they didn't. But the idea that what Santorum said was crazy, that we came here and we found nothing, what people found were Stone Age tribes. And when I say Stone Age, I don't mean it in an insulting manner. I mean it literally. That's why they made arrowheads. That's why you find arrowheads. They're not made of steel or metal. They didn't have metal working. They worked in stone. And unlike South America, in South America, there were big, very well-developed civilizations. And you could say that in some areas, the Aztec civilization, despite their practice of human sacrifice and all of the barbarities and cruelties and horrors, they built what could have been the largest city in the world at the time. There was nothing like that in North America. Nothing. And there was the Hopewell civilization, which people found years and years and years and years later. The Hopewell civilization wasn't even discovered until the turn of the 20th century. And it was an ancient civilization that had been built near the Mississippi River, near St. Louis, frankly, and where they had some cities and some structures and some mounds. They're called the Mound Builders. But the thing is, that civilization was gone by the time Europeans got here, just like the Mayans were gone before the Europeans got here. And we don't fully know what happened, whether it was ecological or basically there was one fundamental problem with the native civilizations here in the New World. They were brutal to one another. And the amount of killing that powered these societies was profound. Let's go to Mike in San Diego, who is going to educate us on the cultural contributions of Native Americans. Go ahead.
Well, I think the two most important would be peanut butter and chocolate. And I mean, there's a lot of foods that we discovered here in the Americas.
How about tobacco?
Yeah, tobacco, corn, tomatoes. There's lots of things like that, you know, just agriculturally. But I think you also have to talk about the contributions to the U.S. Constitution that was made from the Iroquois Confederacy as well.
Okay. You know that that's nonsense.
No, I don't know
that that's nonsense. No, it is. First of all, the Iroquois Confederacy didn't have writing, let alone a written constitution. None of the North American Native tribes had any form of writing, not hieroglyphics, not numbers, nothing. And that was why the Indian, Cherokee Indian, Sequoia, was famous because he created, because he had learned it from white people, the first Indian alphabet. Now, this, again, doesn't make the Indians bad people. It doesn't make them terrible. But the agricultural contributions you're talking about, and I knew someone would bring that up, those agricultural contributions happen to be that there were plants that grew over in the New World, like corn, that didn't grow elsewhere. The Europeans didn't know about that, and they certainly picked it up. Tobacco was also a rather dubious contribution from Indians. Indians definitely smoked it. They knew it. They cultivated it. And unfortunately, for all those people who have suffered over the years from the illness associated with tobacco, Europeans eagerly picked it up. But this thing about the Iroquois Confederacy, what you're referring to is that Benjamin Franklin made a comment at the Constitutional Convention. And he said, we should be like the Iroquois, where they maintain their own tribes at the same time that they work together. But the idea that if Benjamin Franklin, having said that, with the Iroquois having been British allies during the revolutionary struggle, if he had known that that would lead people to say, oh, we based our constitution on the Iroquois Confederacy, he would laugh. He would think that that was preposterous. Because there was no kind of written agreement, structure, or anything on which to base a constitution involving the five Iroquois nations. Anything else, Mike?
Well, yeah, there is one other thing. And I mean, if you look at how the Spanish colonized America, they basically enslaved Indians. And one of the reasons that they did not make any headway in North America is because the Indian tribes they found her just would not submit to slavery. They would run away, they would escape or whatever. And there's something of that independent spirit that was found in the Indian tribes here in North America that did influence frontier culture and that gave, I think, Americans the audacity to stand up to the British and not submit to what King George wanted us to do.
Okay, you know that none of the revolutionary founders would agree with that. They did not model themselves on the natives, but you are right to some extent. And the main reason that the Spaniards had more success enslaving Indians, but not much, because the Spaniards also brought over huge numbers of people from Africa. And which is why the Portuguese, for instance, Brazil to this day is over a third the descendants of slaves who were brought over by the Portuguese. But in any event, the point that you were making is that the Aztecs and the Incas had these huge civilizations, and they had slaves. So people were used to that slavery idea. And you're right that the Native Americans in North America did not have societies that were based on slavery. We'll be right back. And on the Michael Medved show, talking about Rick Santorum's, I think it is inartful and maybe even a little bit insensitive to say that we came here and there was nothing. But in terms of an organized system of government, in terms of cities or schools of any kind, or any of those things that you associate with civilization, even civilization going back to the 17th and 18th centuries, there wasn't a lot in North America. Again, it's different if you look at Mexico. It's different if you look at Peru. It's different if you look at Central America. And this is one of the big mysteries, frankly, that anthropologists wonder about. Why would it be that the big Indian cultures that did art and calendars and built very major cities and architecture and large temples, why didn't that ever exist in North America? And I do think it's worth noting that this is not something that was wiped out by the Europeans. In other words, the idea of Europeans coming here, primarily British, to what later became the United States, and looking for these big Indian cities and destroying them, it's not true. What happened, and again, it's something I write about in The American Miracle, is it is absolutely true that the pilgrims in Plymouth, which we celebrate every year at Thanksgiving, came to an abandoned Indian village. And that was a site for their settlement. Now, they didn't use any buildings. There weren't really buildings, but they had built some storage areas where they had buried corn seed, which the pilgrims used. And what had happened is in that village, there had been before the pilgrims even got there, long before, some kind of an infection. We don't know what the disease was. Some people think it was measles. It could have been smallpox. It could have been any number of things. But that entire village was wiped out. And the idea that this was germ warfare done by deeply religious people who knew nothing about germ warfare in 1620, no, that's not true. And all of that stuff, I actually spend about 5 or 6 pages giving all the documentation and dealing with this in the 10 Big Lies About America. The idea that there were smallpox blankets that were handed out, this entire thing is based in one sentence in a private letter during the siege of Fort William Henry, where Lord Geoffrey Amherst, who was one of the British commanders, said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we didn't have to deal with these savages anymore, and we should give them infected blankets. But they never did. And there is no evidence of anywhere in that area or in that time period within the 10 years surrounding that letter of any kind of epidemic that is an indication that that ever happened. Is it a terrible thing to say? Yes. Do I wish, for the sake of not distorting the British, who were in so many ways heroic and admirable in settling this country, do I wish that Lord Geoffrey Amherst had not put that in the letter? I do wish that. The entire notion that America is a mistake or a crime, it seems to me so insane for anybody who has benefited from this country, which is everybody who's lived in this country. I mean, if you listen to this, this is from The Guardian, British newspaper. And there's an academic who is an Indian radical. He has founded a group called the Red Nation, an Indigenous Resistance Organization. His name is Nick Estes, and he's an assistant professor at the University of New Mexico. In any event, Nick Estes says this. He says, Rick Santorum repeated a widely held myth of U.S. exceptionalism. Why is it a myth to say that the United States is different from other nations? The United States did not just spring up at a place based upon blood and soil. It was a nation that was formed out of a series of choices by people to come here and to set up a particular kind of commonwealth. He quotes Rick Santorum, we came here and created a blank slate. We birthed a nation from nothing. Well, that's kind of true, isn't it? What did they take that helped them to birth this nation, to create this unique society? And before the revolution, by the way, scholars can affirm to you that people living in North America, that's why the British were so resentful, had the highest living standard in the world already. Yes, it helped a lot that the landscape was so forgiving, but these were also clever people who were trying to replicate some of the most enlightened ideas they took with them from Britain. And he said it was born of the people who came here. His we doesn't include indigenous people, writes Nick Estes, who were already here, or African people who were brought here in chains. And that blank slate required the violent pillaging of two continents, Africa and North America. If the United States was birthed from nothing, then the land and enslaved labor that made the wealth of this nation must have fallen from the sky, because it surely didn't come from Europe. When he says that the labor of enslaved people created American wealth, how is it that the poorest states in the country were those states based on a slave economy? I'm talking about by the time of the Civil War, by the time the North had gone to the enlightened position of eliminating slavery. That allowed prosperity. And the slave system that he writes about as being responsible for American wealth, it's all propaganda and nonsense, with the idea that the world would have been better off if the United States never existed. It's a ridiculous proposition. He writes, racist depictions of indigenous people in the media point to a deeper issue. The erasure of native histories and peoples, which existed long before and despite a white supremacist empire, is a founding principle of the United States. In fact, it's still codified in U.S. law. So when Rick Santorum and his ilk stressed that Europeans possess a divine right, he never said that, to take a continent, create a nation from nothing, and maintain cultural superiority, they're not entirely wrong. It's the default position of a long-sorted history. Actually, if you look at the United States and you compare it to any other country, and that's part of what Rick Santorum was saying, is that we basically have not had a succession of different dynasties, of different cultures. We, from the very beginning of what became the United States, have based ourselves and our ideas on the same few documents and core ideas. It's not like the history of Britain. You had Celts, you had Romans, you had Anglo-Saxons, then you had Normans, and all fighting one another and mixing together. The United States basically has been very, very fortunate, one would say blessed, in our heritage and our consistency. And no other nation in history has had a system of government operating on the same written constitution for anything near as long as the 250 years nearly that we have achieved. It's also been a gift to all of humanity. Now, right now, there's a great deal of discussion about the future of the United States because of the census reveal and changes in politics that should probably help Republicans. We'll be getting to that and more on the Medved Show. Michael Medved Show, talking about, I think, what is going to be the biggest vulnerability of Democrats and progressives moving forward. And unless Joe Biden and Kamala Harris do something to counteract it, I honestly believe their party is going to find a great deal of trouble. And part of it you see in this overreaction to Rick Santorum. What Rick Santorum said, the pull quote that is being held against him, is he says, "We birthed a nation from nothing." I mean, there was nothing here. I mean, yes, we have Native Americans, but candidly, there isn't much Native American culture in American culture. And okay, we had Mike in San Diego called in. He said, there's popcorn, there's peanut butter. I don't know about peanut butter. I don't know if Native Americans raised peanuts. Maybe they did. But there's certainly tobacco, as we talked about. But in terms of American culture, Rick Santorum, if we can point out, is not somebody who is descended from the Mayflower. He's a Paisan. He's an Italian-American. And his grandfather, I believe it was his grandfather, not his great-grandfather, his grandfather came from Italy and worked in coal mines. And the idea that he says we means that he sees himself as part of this American experience, which has been glorious and a gift to all of humanity and a gift to the world. And not because you had some kind of divinely assigned privilege, but because all of our founders believed they had a profound responsibility to the God who had favored this country and its settlement with so many early blessings. This came in from Sally in Auburn, and she writes, I'm listening to your diatribe against native tribes. More nonsense from a white man. I would call what you're saying a verbal hate crime. Here are some short questions for you. Okay, I'll try to answer them. Did Native Americans exist here first? Yes, and most people think they didn't just spring from the soil here, that they crossed the Bering Land Bridge from Asia and from through Alaska. But okay, they existed here first, sure. Did white people take the land from them? Answer, no, because there was no concept of land ownership, and most of the land where white people set up settlements, like Manhattan Island, was empty. There were no cities there. There were no towns there. There were no villages there. Did said whites force said natives onto reservations? Much later? Yeah, reservations weren't really established until, some 200 years after white people started arriving. The answer is simple. America is stolen land, and how dare you? Okay, then, by that standard, would you believe that the Anglo-Saxons stole the land of Britain from the Celts? Really? Or that, for instance, one native tribe, the Iroquois, apparently had displaced previous native tribes in upstate New York where they were. The idea that any time that one group of population takes over from another group in the population, that it amounts to stolen land, it seems to me is not an idea that's easy to defend. And the question here, Sally, with your terminology of stolen land, so do you think it would have been better if no one had ever come here to settle the New World? That the native tribes had continued warring against each other, slaughtering one another, eating one another. Cannibalism was fairly common, particularly in the Southwest, and we know that because they've taken a look at the DNA with ancient pots that they found, which is full of human parts as food. The idea that there was stolen land, that there were deed. Now, what there was treaty violations, and we talked about that yesterday. General Nelson Miles, the United States Army, who was the commander of our army in the West, actually wrote into Washington complaining about how white people in the Dakotas were violating treaties that they had pushed the natives into agreeing on. When we come back, we are going to be talking a little bit about what is going on in terms of foreign policy. There's a huge article today, an article based upon the recollections of Vietnam veterans, suggesting this in the Wall Street Journal, that what we are doing in Afghanistan right now, what the Biden administration is doing by pledging to remove every single American military individual from Afghanistan by September 11th of this year, that is repeating some of the disastrous mistakes of Vietnam. And we'll be speaking with Ralph Peters about that, longtime veteran of the American military and a retired lieutenant colonel in intelligence. And there's also a foreign policy issue involving Iran, which was just voted onto the UN Commission on the Status of Women. Given the fact that the status of women in Iran is not up to what we would consider to be civilized standards of the 21st century, there's a lot of pushback on that. We'll be speaking about that as well. And then, as I mentioned, there is today, the Republican Party came almost surely about three seats closer to winning the five seats they need to take over the House of Representatives. Why is that? It's because of the results of the census, which show that some of the most Democratic parts of the country, where states enjoy one-party rule like California is losing a seat in the House of Representatives. They'll still be the largest delegation, but they'll have 52 seats in the House, not 53. And that difference is the first time since California became a state in 1850 that over a 10-year cycle, it's actually lost seats. Texas is gaining two seats. Florida is gaining a seat. Other conservative states are gaining a seat. Montana, in something of a surprise, is gaining a seat. So what does this mean for the party's future? We will be talking about that. And also a series of GOP physicians who also happen to be serving in the Congress of the United States have gotten together to put together a public service announcement. On anything partisan? No, on something it seems to me that is entirely beyond partisanship. And speaking of beyond partisanship, that is one of those things that I think is so important and so impactful about this whole Santorum debate. If you ask most people, do you believe that it's a good thing that our founders created a new nation here? Or do you believe that we should all feel regret for their horrible crime in creating the most prosperous, the most just, the least imperfect, the least corrupt nation ever? And I think that the overwhelming majority of Americans, including a majority of actual Democrats, would say, yeah, it's a good thing that America came into existence. That's why we celebrate the 4th of July. And no, we are not going to be forced to celebrate the 4th of July without hamburgers. Hamburgers can be part of the 4th of July if you want. And also, you can either choose plant-based beers or non-plant-based beers. What am I talking about? I'm talking about one of the silliest debates that we've had recently, in a debate involving the Senate Majority Leader, actually. We will get to that and to so much more coming up in this Michael Medved show, which is proud to be located in this greatest nation on God's green earth.